This is Will's Band of the Week for March 13th, 2017. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett live in studio.
Hey, everybody.
And Craig from the Ipswich Bureau.
Here I am.
Yeah, the Ipswich Bureau is active once again.
Yeah, happy new year to everyone. To you, Will, and to Barrett, and to the listeners.
Yeah.
This is your first time of the year. Wow.
Yeah, I'm being a bit... Well, because the first time you see someone after January 1st,
right.
You have to say happy
Absolutely.
New year. Even if it's March the 12th, maybe? March the 12th.
Yes, it is. Wow.
Or even if it were, like, in August... and we hadn't talked to you, you'd have to say Happy New Year. You'd be obligated,
yeah.
Right?
Those are the conventions
yeah.
of etiquette, yeah.
I remember when I first started in, like, the actual working world, and like I had a real job, and I remember having to sort of learn the etiquette that when you're in the office, you know, the first time you see somebody, you say good morning to them or whatever, or you acknowledge them, right? And then, but then the second or later time you see them, you just walk past them. Just like, yeah, because now we're on business now.
Right.
We don't have to say hi when we walk past each other. Yeah.
Because of the raised eyebrows, sort of kind of acknowledging their presence.
Right.
Yeah, any sort of acknowledgement is fine. You
yeah.
do come to the situations where you can't remember if you've acknowledged somebody.
Yeah.
Or maybe you said hi in a kind of a chaotic time with other people around and not sure if the attention was there, so you don't know whether they're aware that you acknowledge them.
Yeah.
So that's an awkward thing.
Right. There's all kinds of ways to get in an awkward situation, especially
right.
if you're a little bit not the greatest social person, which I'll put myself in that category.
But we've all said hi to the audience and to
yeah.
each other.
Right. So we're doing great as far as
yeah.
you know, the internet is concerned, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For some reason, a whole bunch of people downloaded our episode from last week. I'm never sure when that happens, if it's like a, you know, some robot downloaded it 100 times or something, because when the numbers get bigger, it's like, well, why would there be just some big thing?
Right.
Or it could be because one of the bands, you know, spread it. That could happen, I suppose,
that might
right?
be.
You know,
our social media department ought to be on top of this.
Right.
It should be able to deliver the answer as to why this occurred.
Exactly. Right.
Who's in charge of that area?
Social I thought that media. Was you, Craig.
Oh dear! Yes, that's why I've been
Aren't
brought
you the
in to hold
Google
to be held to account for my failure to explain.
Do you ever wonder that, like, who is in charge of somebody's Twitter account? You know, like bands do this, and they don't really say which band member it is. You can usually kind of figure it out, right?
Yeah, I like to guess things like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. All right. Well, today's podcast is brought to you by Smitten. A new beer from Bell's. That's a brewery in Michigan.
Right. This is described as a golden rye pale ale.
Yeah, Barrett brought it over.
Mine hasn't arrived.
No?
Yeah,
oh, my gosh.
I guess it got delayed. We tried to overnight it, but...
I meant to talk to you about that ahead
yeah.
of time. Well, I did forget to put that into the mail.
Oh.
So it's my fault.
I thought it was going to be worth the $50 US
no.
that it was going to cost. Huh.
Maybe Craig has a backup that he can
yeah,
call
I
on
can
right
tell
now.
You, I'm being brought to you by Beaver Town, Black Betty, Black IPA.
Oh,
wow.
That's
Where's that
cool.
from?
That's Beaver Town is a brewery in northeast London.
Mm-hmm.
So,
with a musical connection, Black Betty by Ram Jam.
That's
oh,
right.
that's a classic.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I used to love that song.
Ranch.
Yes. Black Betty. Oh, man.
Nice.
Yeah. So they probably don't export Bell's to the UK, but it's a pretty good brewery in Michigan.
Yeah. It's on the, it's in Kalamazoo in the western part of the state.
Okay. Well, so much great stuff to talk about this week. So... I've got something that's a follow-up from last week, because we were talking about Surfer Blood last week, and then, you know, somehow that whole original 38 special reference subject came up, and so I actually did music journalism by searching our own podcast archives, and I found the original 38 Special reference.
Wow.
Yeah. It's from sometime in 2010.
You know, when you say that, it doesn't sound that long ago, but obviously that was 7 years ago, or six and a half, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it all began, the 38 Special reference.
Yeah. So here I'm going to play it. This is where it all began, right here.
Okay, so there's a lot going on there. I mean, after the first, I looked at the time on there. The first 55 seconds is really where it sounds like the band that I'm going to identify in a second. And then it starts to sound like the Shins kind of imitating that band a little bit. And then it starts to sound a little bit like, you know, I don't know what.
Okay, I'm going to say 38 Special.
Exactly. How did you know? The beginning of that song is exactly like 38 Special. It sounds like Hold On Loosely or Hang On Loosely. Yep. All right.
All right. I can't believe I got it. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
I would
Had you thought that before? Or
I don't know. I was trying to process it before. That song is kind of all over. It's like this is one that as I listened to the album, I've appreciated it more. But the first two or three times through, I'm like, I don't know if I really get this song, you know. But yeah, it's sort of an example of how there's a lot of variety on the album. And one of the strengths of it, I think, is a lot of the songs you get halfway through and it takes a turn that is unexpected.
Right. So okay. Yeah, I think a lot of young bands do this where their sound is just all over the place. And it's kind of interesting because it's eclectic. But they're going to have to settle on a few things. Like, you hear the first song, and that's their Pavement song. And then they sound like Band of Horses half the time. And then they sound like 38 Special, Journey, and even REO Speedwagon late in the album, if you want. They do.
Okay, I haven't heard that one. Okay, that's us from 2010.
Wow.
That's
we sounded
fun,
so
right?
young.
We were a lot younger.
Yeah, I was thinking you sounded youthful.
Before we completely just devolved into old aging rockers.
Barely into my mid-40s at that point.
Yeah.
You can hear that you were enjoying as well, talking about the music. I don't know if that, you're still enthusiastic about podcasting at that stage.
Yeah, in sharp contrast to now. Well, I'm getting a phone call from Cincinnati.
Well, you're an important guy, Barrett. It's probably some band trying to beg to get on the podcast.
Probably Pete Rose.
If it's from Cincinnati, most likely. Yeah. Who else would it be? Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I thought that was kind of fun to go back and find. So the next item on the agenda is that I have a movie report. I watched the Smart Studios story.
Mm-hmm.
Smart Studios was a studio in Madison. And so it was cool to watch it because it has all these Madison references. So if people are interested to know what the music scene was like in the 80s and 90s in Madison, you can watch this movie called The Smart Studios Story. And I was kind of worried that because I was mainly just watching it because it was about Madison. So I thought it might not be very good, right? But it's pretty solid. It's the classic rock documentary format of just a ton of interviews and footage and music and stuff.
Right.
It's a whole lot of Butch Vig.
Right.
And he was the guy who was one of the founders of the studio. And then he got famous because he produced Nirvana. And then he formed the band Garbage that hit it pretty big. That's the only band in the whole documentary that really, you know, made it big, so to speak.
Right.
But tons of bands that you would have heard of from...
did they cover Killdozer a lot?
Yep.
I used to work with Michael Gerald at the Union.
It's a Killdozer guy?
Mm-hmm. He's the main guy, the singer and the songwriter.
Yeah, well, you should watch this documentary because it was fun for me because I don't have, like, good friends who are in it, but I kind of have... There's several people that I have met who are in it, and it was kind of fun because you'd be watching and be like, hey, I know that guy.
Right.
You know, it's like, hey, there's Derek from Ivory Library. You know,
right.
Stuff like that. It was cool.
And I remember you saying in the past that you'd been in there. It's closed now, but
right.
You were in right. there, and somebody's like, hey, here's the original tapes of
the Nirvana demo tape. He just handed me the original Nirvana demo tape. Yeah, I'm like, this seems not very secure, but it was cool. There's a lot of Billy Corgan being interviewed, and he comes across okay, although he disses Madison a little bit. Like, you know, like, okay, I'm the Chicago guy. Madison is this, like, small town. People say stuff like, we never even heard of Madison before. It's like, really?
Right, as if that says something about Madison, really. It's yeah. saying more about the speaker.
It's a city of 250,000. You should
right, one
at
of
least
the state...
have heard of it.
Right.
And then, of course, there's a Dave Grohl appearance, because he has to appear in
naturally.
Everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he doesn't dominate this one. So anyway, I think it's actually, you know, worthwhile for anybody to watch if you're a music fan, because you get this little you know, puts Madison on the map a little bit. So I thought it was cool. So there you go.
All right.
Okay, now we're going to turn it over to Craig for his 7 live reports.
I'm sorry. I've got nothing.
Wait a minute. Wasn't it in the contract? 7, at least 7 live reports?
My funding hasn't come through. I think you must have put it in the parcel with the beer.
Yes. That's not right. Right. It was supposed to come okay. with the beer. Yeah.
So I haven't been able to get out. I'm waiting for a bit of cash to come through.
All right.
I think in the future, we'll have you maybe just file an expense report, and you can send it to us, and we'll reimburse you. Then you don't have to be waiting for the money.
Yeah, because I'm going to miss too many chances to go out and see live bands this way. I'm
right.
just waiting on you. Yeah.
Right.
Think of the bills we would get from Craig, though, for all the live reports. I mean, the transportation is one thing, but then if he traveled too far, he'd stay at a hotel, and he'd probably stay at the finest hotel, you know, right next to
the finest hotels known to humanity. Yeah.
Yeah.
And get a per also diem for
2 or 3 beers, whiskeys.
Oh, right. My gosh.
Yeah. We'd get bills for, food. Like, you know, $25 glasses of whiskey and, you know, a lot of pints of beer. It would be that. Costs could get racked up, but they'd be worth it because the quality that we'd get would be
right.
worth it, right?
Yeah.
Speaking of whiskey, there's a new whiskey place on State Street. Remember where Paul's Club used to be?
Yeah.
And it turned into a place called the 608. Now it's a whiskey place.
It's like it purporting to be like experts on whiskey?
Yeah. It's called like the Cask and Barrel or something like that. Anyway, they I wish I could remember what it was, but it was a 25-year-old scotch they had. A 2-ounce pour is $250.
That's
so
where
I only got one of them because
yeah,
they were so
one.
Expensive.
Well, see, when you walked in there and you said, "I want your best whiskey, price is no object," you figured you know you'd get like a $30 one,
right?
Yeah,
yeah. There's no way anybody's going in there and buying it like without trying to impress somebody else.
Yeah,
you know,
$250.
$250.
Yeah, it's a little steep. Yeah. It's one of my favorite stories about the night that I got engaged. We were in this bar on the, you know, the bar side of the restaurant, and this guy walked in looking really important, kind of barged in like he's the most important guy in the room, and announced, he said really loudly at the bar, "I want your best wine, price is no object."
What a, yeah.
It's the kind of thing Barrett does all the time. But,
Except it's the exact opposite, you know?
Yeah.
I want your cheapest wine.
Price is the ultimate object.
The only object.
Well, you get a lot of Schlitz then, right? Is that like the cheapest beer you get around here now?
Oh, no.
A lot of bars have Schlitz.
I mean, if you're willing to...
The retro beer.
Yeah.
That's a Milwaukee beer back from the 70s. It kind of... I don't know if it ever completely went away, but it became pretty irrelevant.
Yeah, I mean, they went out of business and then somebody just... Just like they, you can buy Blatz,
yeah.
and Schlitz. They don't really, and Pabst. They're yeah. only labels that have been sold off to other breweries.
But they do seem like they've at least attempted to use the same recipe, don't they? Because they kind of taste similar to me.
Yeah,
I don't have them very often, but every once in a while, it's fun. All right, let's see. That's the beer component. Listen to that. I don't even know what that was. All right. No, I mean, not only do you not have 7, like you got to have some live reports, Craig. Come on, you're going to shows all the time.
Not since early in February did I go to anything.
Oh,
and that's not really worth reporting. It's so long ago that I can't really report back on it.
All right.
Yeah, only 2 so far this year.
I must have done a like on Facebook or something. I'm getting information about Indie Tracks, and I know that's one you've gone to, right?
Oh, that's a very nice little festival, yeah.
Yeah, that seems really cool. There's a thing in the UK that a friend of mine is going to. It's a thing that the Mekons are putting on. Because, you know, I play in this band that's like a Mekons tribute band. And they are they're doing a, I don't know, it's called Mekon Fest or something to celebrate their 40th anniversary as a band.
Wow.
So that seems pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Is it, where is it being? Is it in Wales?
At
are they
one,
from Wales?
I am going to just...
Well, the person in the tribute band ought to know.
Yeah, I know. And now you put me on the spot, and you've completely embarrassed me. I think that's a violation of your contract. Also, you never want to make the host look bad, and you're going to be reprimanded.
Sorry about that.
I can't remember. Maybe I can do some music journalism while we're playing a song or something. We'll figure it out. So maybe we can dispatch you there for a live report. We'll have to put you up at the campground.
It'd be interesting to go to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, should we go to our headlining bands for the week then?
Yeah, fine with me.
All right, let's start with the Bats. The Bats are from New Zealand. They are not the other Bats, right, Barrett? You found the wrong Bats.
Yeah, when I know they've been around forever, and so I thought, why don't I listen to the first one and then I'll listen to the new one. But I listened to, apparently there was a band in, it was 1980, I think, in Boston called the Bats, to put out one really terrible power pop album that I listened to for, I don't know, maybe almost 10 minutes before I turned it off, and I thought I'd better check on this. So,
did you see who was in that band?
No.
There's a person who's now well known who was in that other Bats.
I don't know.
His name is John Bryan. He is now a very well known record producer.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's produced a lot of, like, a couple of albums ago, there was a Best Coast album that he produced.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also, you know, he's produced more famous things than that. But, he was the guy in the Inferior Bats.
Right.
They should have to change their name to the Inferior Bats retroactively.
Yeah, okay. Something to think about.
It's only American bands who make other bands do that, isn't it?
That's what usually happens.
So the New Zealand Bats would be the NZ Bats or the Kiwi Bats.
NZ Bats.
The Kiwi Bats, yeah. Yeah, yeah, good point. Yeah, that's what we usually do.
Yeah.
There's a new album by the Bats, and they're aging rockers, and they're from New Zealand, and those are both cool things, right? Or they can be. In their case, I think it's good.
Yeah, who's got a little history about the Bats to share?
Craig?
Well, I know a couple of things. I think, well, one of the guys, I think the lead guy, is called Robert Scott.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guitarist and vocalist, and he is a kind of Mr. Flying Nun in a way, although Flying Nun is the record label from Dunedin in New Zealand. So the Chills and the Verlaines are the bands on there, and the Clean and the Bats. And this Robert Scott is in both the Clean and the Bats. And so he's sort of, it's got a record label which, it's not house bands, but has its own sort of collection of bands who have appeared regularly on it over the years, and the sound, a very distinctive sort of sound to it. Anyone who's listened to the podcast for a while will know we featured a few, well, we talked about the Chills a couple of times and the Bats in the past. The sort of jangle pop sound is what you'd associate with the Flying Nun record label.
Right. And I haven't gone back and listened to their really early stuff dating back to the 80s, but this is the third album that I've really listened to, sort of, we'll call them the modern day Bats, right?
Yeah.
And I think we've talked about the last two on the podcast, and I know at least one of them I had in my top 10, maybe even both of them. So, solid band. I'm endorsing them. So
It's crazy. I can't believe this is the first album since 2011.
Right.
So six years, five and a half or 6 years. And I must have listened to it so much over at the time and since then that it seems more recent to me. They've been away for so long. Well, that's strange to me.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, it seems like it's been like 2013 or something. Anyway, the new one's called The Deep Set. And I think as a reward for his music journalism, we should give Craig the first pick.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I've got a list of three here. One of my favorite songs on the album is track 10, Dirkistan. It's kind of, well, let's listen to it and then I'll give some thoughts afterwards. We'll be right back.
Bullets fly, the snow comes down in Turkestan. No one knows the time of year. The hills run around in circles. Trees all bend in Turkestan. I don't know if I'll get out of darkest Turkestan. No one has a plan in darkest Turkestan. Things are looking pretty grim in Turkestan. I've been feeling lost among the clouds. Not so many trees left here to bend. Winds have been so bad this year. No one knows your name in darkest Turkestan. No one has a plan in darkest Turkestan. Standing and soaking. Time is running out, I know. No one knows your name in darkest Turkestan. No one has a plan in darkest Turkestan.
Yep, Turkestan. That's not
country. Sorry, go ahead.
That's not a real country, is it?
Or a real place? Or no, I don't think so. I was about to say that's a story about a fictional place, but I didn't want to say that in case it was completely wrong.
I looked it so up to see if it was real. Yeah,
no, I don't believe it is a real place.
No, don't think so.
But I picked that because it's not the most... I just think there's something so nice when a song is just a simple, very simple lyrics, very simple format, and when it's done well, it can be as good as anything, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and it's kind of the... It's one of the more sort of sensitive tracks, right?
Well, I think generally his voice kind of has this pathos to it, which is one of the things I like about the band. It kind of has some kind of emotion or sadness in his voice. And then when he's singing about, well, I don't know what, you know, just, yeah. Well, that's all I have to say about that, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you'll pardon the pun, the bats have kind of been flying under my radar for a while. They've really just been a kind of a familiar name, and I know that you've talked about them in the past. And so I hadn't heard it in, you know, since the original podcast that we listened to. And I had a hard time, to be honest, really connecting with this album. I think part of it was that I spent most of my time this past week preparing for the other band that we're going to talk about. So I listened to that quite a bit more. But so I'll leave the song selections to you guys.
All right.
But generally, you know, I'd agree with Craig's view on the guy's voice. There was just kind of a sadness to it and, you know, jangly and not entirely unlike the next band that we're going to talk about, if you ask me.
Yeah, there's probably a comparison. And we, you know, the high-level music journalists that we are going to just tie this in beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I'll take track 4 called Walking Man.
Thank you.
So you could say that's pretty straightforward jangle pop, but I think it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand Barrett's point about the album not connecting with him, and I don't think it's the most consistent. I don't think every track is as good, but I think that particular Walking Man is songwriting of the highest order. It's brilliant. Just simple jangle pop, but it's my favorite type of music, and it's executed brilliantly there.
One comparison, we like to compare, that jangly thing sounded to me a lot like The Church. And I think if you put Steve Kilby on the vocals, I'd love to hear that song re-recorded with Steve Kilby on the vocals. It'd be an octave lower. It would be great. Right. So
maybe we can arrange that like in studio thing.
Yeah.
You'd have to, you know, be some scheduling things to iron out, but
we could fly him out to fly Steve Kilby out from Sydney, and then we'd have the Bats send us the track without the vocals, and then we could could do it right here.
That's true.
Yeah. Maybe that could put Fourth Bedroom Studios on the map.
Right. So then, be making a documentary about us.
Yeah, the Fourth Bedroom Studios story. That documentary would be coming out in, you know, 8 or 10 years. And it'll be mostly just interviews of you and me.
Right.
And Chris, we'll be talking about how, you know, way back in the beginning, we had no idea what we were doing, as opposed to now that we're so professional now. I mean, we're just so smooth. It's just incredible, right?
Right.
I mean,
you know,
we
I wish
that
were the case.
We could be NPR for sure.
Right.
Right. Like, am I Bob Boylan, or do we decide that, or am I Robin
Hilton? You're Robin Hilton.
Yeah. Who's Boylan? You? Yeah, you've got the best voice.
Does Bob Boylan have the best voice?
Well, yeah, he's like, I think you'd be Boylan, and Chris would be...
Chris would be like Netta Ulaby.
I don't even know who that
Nina
is.
Nina Totenberg.
No, I thought he was going to be Stephen Thompson.
Oh, yeah, okay. We'll give him that.
Yeah. All right. Did they even broadcast NPR in the UK, Craig?
No, I don't know. But
I mean, you could probably
get kind of a meaningless in a way, because all radio stations can be listened to online, can't they? So
right,
I can listen to Seattle College Radio if I like online.
Right, right. But it's not, it doesn't have a presence at all, right? Like, nobody cares. Or I wonder if there's like some small group of people in the UK that are like, hey, I listen to American National Public Radio.
Now, like, Craig, if somebody said, well, that's the kind of a thing that they'd talk about on NPR, does that have any resonance with you at all? Or
no, if anyone was going to be that person, it would be me. And I hadn't heard of NPR until you mentioned it on the podcast over the years. So.
That's like when people mention, like, oh, that's like a Radio 1 thing. I'm like, I have no idea what that means. You know, is that still even a thing, like Radio 1, Radio 2?
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, and 4, yeah.
Like, and they each have their own distinctive...
And 6, 6 is the good one.
Okay. Like, what's Radio 1?
That would be mainstream chart music.
Okay.
But the charts is completely meaningless, because Ed Sheeran is positions 1 through 10 or something. But, yeah, Radio 1 is chart stuff. Radio 2 would be... 60s, 70s, and 80s and 90s chart-friendly music. But Radio 2 is much more palatable than Radio 1. 3 is classical. 4 is talk radio with plays, book reviews, current affairs issues. That would probably be most people's idea of the thinking person's station. 5 is sport, and 6 is indie music. So Radio 6 is what I would listen to most.
Yeah.
Is it good? Like, Radio 6, could you just put that on? You'd be happy?
Well, if you know certain times, but they also have, there's a guy called Craig Charles. He was in a sitcom called Red Dwarf, which is absolutely brilliant. But I don't think it would have got to the States, really from the late 80s or 90s. But he has the Craig Charles Funk and Soul Show, and that's on Radio 6. So you'd want to not tune in when that was on.
Uh-huh.
But say you just randomly tuned in, you probably have a 60% chance of finding a good DJ, a good show.
Well, that's pretty good.
There's a guy in the evenings, weekday evenings, called Mark Radcliffe, and he plays, that's his name, isn't it? Yeah. 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. He plays similar music to Will's Band of the Week.
Well, that's cool. See, we have almost no good radio. It's pretty bad.
That's Barrett, why we listen to WAPL.
Yeah, right. The Rockin' Apple. Let me make an obscure radio reference that nobody else will have heard of if they weren't in Madison in the 80s or 90s. Did you ever listen to Harry Rag on WORT?
No, but his name is a Kinks reference. I can tell you that.
Okay, well, he was Harry Rag. That's not his real name, but I didn't know where the reference came from. But they interviewed Harry Rag on the Smart Studios documentary, which I thought that was super cool.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, there's Harry Rag.
Yeah, I don't know what I listened to radio-wise back then.
It's not like there was good radio back then. Hmm. Yeah. All right, we need another pick from this Bats album. Craig, you got one?
Yeah, we have a little rule, don't we, on the podcast. If track 7's good, then the album should be good.
Yeah.
So that's track 7 is called Antlers, and it's good.
Number 7 theory holding true.
Yeah.
Have we done anything to persuade you, Barrett, that this is, better than perhaps your initial impressions?
Well, my initial impressions weren't, I didn't have any negative feelings about it. It was just, the songs came across to me as pleasant and not as memorable as I'd hoped, you know. But that's just, you can chalk that up to a lack of familiarity and, you know, if I listen to it a few more times, which I plan to do, it'll raise, my estimation will improve.
Yeah, I'll agree with Craig. It's not completely consistent, but there's a lot of good songs on it, and it's a good sound, and it's overall a thumbs up, I think. That's okay. Giving it.
So you're giving them, it's not the most enthusiastic thumbs up I've heard from you.
It's a 7.4.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I would say 3 out of 5 or 68, maybe.
Okay.
68.
Out of 100. This is ridiculous. I don't do the 68s out of 100. I'm going to say 3 out of 5.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've debated what the proper rating system should be back and forth on this podcast. I think there's some disagreement about it.
I think the fewer numbers or stars or whatever, the better.
I kind of like
forces you to kind of make some decisions.
I like the large numbers. I think we should have a 1,000-point scale. It'd be like,
yeah, that's true.
That is a 712,
right?
Something like that.
Something could, like, two things could be a 77.1. It's like,
yeah,
I need more information.
Right, exactly. Which one's better? Yeah.
Right.
Yep. So anyway, I'm going to take that position.
Yeah, I'm with Craig on this one.
All right. Well, ultimately, we let the listeners decide because we're such cool people that we actually allow people to have an opinion different than us. I mean, it might not be correct, but at least it's okay to have the opinion, right?
Right.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Okay, here's another band. They're called the Feelies. They are not from New Zealand.
No, they're from New Jersey.
Correct. And let me just state an act of totally irresponsible music, lack of music journalism. I went back and found when Barrett and I were discussing the last Feelies album in 2011.
Wow.
So this is cool. People should do this. Just do a search for Will's Band of the Week and then any band name, and you'll find if we've talked about them, right?
Yeah.
So I was thinking, I think we talked about the Feelies before. So I searched it, found the podcast where we talked about them, and egregious, inexcusable error by me, I said they were from Athens, Georgia.
Oh, boy.
For some reason, I had them confused with someone else from Athens, Georgia. And you know what's even worse, though? No listeners corrected it.
They just let it go. Right?
Yeah, you didn't either.
I was just being polite.
They just let it go. So, no.
I know what must have happened. I know what happened.
What?
Because you knew that Peter Buck produced their second album, the Feelies' second album, The Good Earth, in 1986. So you must have got R.E.M. and the Feelies a little bit muddled up there. But you were on the right track. Just something got muddled up in your mind.
And I think R.E.M. might have cited them as an influence at some point. And so there must have been, something.
Yeah, they did.
Okay, so thank you for giving me an excuse for that terrible music journalism, which we are now correcting 5 years later, or 6 years, or whatever it is.
Yeah, I remember, I noticed it at the time, and it's been bothering me for 6 years now.
Yeah.
And I've been dying to bring it up.
Tonight.
Now it's finally off of my chest.
Every time you see me, there's this little tension.
How could you have
thought that? It's like,
good God.
Oh, God, he made that terrible mistake. Okay, so
there's stupid mistakes and intelligent mistakes, aren't there? And probably other kinds as well. And I think this is an intelligent mistake by Will.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. So, okay, that helps your contractual status just a little bit, because you built me up a little bit after you destroyed me earlier.
I want Craig to kind of frame all of my mistakes in the way that he framed yours. You know, maybe talking
to my wife. What mistakes?
Well, I can't think of anything specific right now.
Maybe, I've never heard you make a mistake on the podcast.
No, I'm not talking about that. Maybe major life choices would be more kinds of the mistakes that I've made.
Yeah.
And if you could frame them as intelligent mistakes, and I think I might come across looking a little better than I typically do. So I might call on you for that, Craig.
I'm here.
All right.
So what about this Feelies album? It's a new album, and it's called In Between. And they're aging rockers.
Yeah.
We should probably play something and then talk about it. And Barrett, since you've listened to it so much, what's your first pick?
Well, I like everything on the album with one exception. I think there's one terrible song.
It's the very last one, because it goes on for 9 minutes.
That's not the one I'm thinking of.
Oh, okay.
But I'm going to pick Gone, Gone, Gone.
All right. Here it is.
So, yeah, I think that one they're stretching out a little bit from their usual one or possibly two chords to using three chords there. And I like it. It's also got a little bit of a different guitar sound in the beginning than they typically use.
Can we call that American jangle pop?
Sure.
As opposed to New Zealand jangle pop?
Yeah, I think that, you know that thing where we say, oh, this band sounds like this, and then we play a sample and it doesn't sound anything like what we just said. But I regard them as a jangle pop band, and that was definitely a good example of it there. So I don't think the album really has got that many examples of their typical sound, what I would regard, but the track 8 was, that one was an example of it.
It's pretty quiet overall, isn't it?
Yeah.
And some of the sort of whispery aspects of it remind me of sort of older Yola Tango a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm biased, or maybe that I was led into that because of the New Jersey thing. But,
I wrote that down in my notes, and I think track 11, the one you said you didn't like, reminded me a lot of Yola Tango.
Yeah, that's the one thing I don't like about Yola Tango is when they go on for 10 minutes. And so, I mean, I kind of like the sound of the song, but it's like, okay, you're 6 minutes in and they're still on the same riff and they're just going and going. And I'm like, come on, people. And I guess I just didn't have the attention span for it. Remember that Yola Tango album about, God, by now it's probably 10 years ago. Wasn't there one called something like, I'm not afraid of you and I'm going to beat your ass?
I will kick your ass. Beat your ass.
Yeah. But I don't know if that was the one that had like a 15-minute track on it.
I think it was the one before it.
That could be.
Yeah. And then like, something turned itself inside out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, all was forgiven when I saw them live and they were great and they didn't. There's a danger that when a band plays live, they're going to be like, this is going to be so cool live. Let's play that 15-minute song. They did a great job with their song selection.
Mm-hmm.
Yola Tango did when I saw them a few years ago. That was one that my wife left because she was falling asleep.
They did the slow set.
Yeah, they did the quiet set, and then she left. Yeah, and then they rocked for the second half, so I told her that she missed it. It was great.
The only time I saw them was in 2004 when they were at that rally, that election rally, and they played at the Terrace.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was for a rally for Trump, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, man. Not really. All right. I'll take a pick here, and then Craig can pick. You know, he can have the deep cut. I'm going to pick another kind of catchy one, which is track 2, Turn Back Time. That was not the whole song because there was about 2 or 3 seconds of the fade out left. so we didn't play the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we won't be sued?
No. We keep trying, and we just can't get sued.
Right.
Yeah.
Got all these kids with their, you know, their cassette recorders, and then when the song starts, they unpause it. Like, you remember that, Will, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Even I remember that.
You do? Yeah, wow.
I used to do that.
On Radio 6? Oh, on Radio 1. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so when you were younger.
I was younger.
Sure.
John Peel used to be on Radio 1. Thanks.
Really? Okay. I mean, based on just the things that you said about 1 through 6, I'd have thought he must have been on Radio 6.
Yeah, it didn't exist. He may have died soon after it began, or we ought to know these things. But, his show had been on Radio 1 for many, many years, and so it stayed there.
Yeah, he's a big enough name that, you know, he's kind of a big name over here, too. And so many bands put out albums called the John Peel Sessions, you know.
Right.
I guess they must have just done a good enough job with the recordings that they were always considered high enough quality to release, you know, on a record. So, it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a good guy.
So, you know, you were talking about kind of the hushed vocals and, you know, it's not a real prominent part of the songs almost, right? Even going back to their first album in 1980, you kind of hear that. And so you combine that with the, you know, kind of jangly guitar, and you can really see where they influenced R.E.M. You know, the first two R.E.M. albums, the vocals are, you know, it's almost like he's hiding. You know what I mean?
Mumbling.
Mumbling.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really the guitar that's carrying the songs. I mean,
or the bass.
Yeah, and the bass. So, yeah, the influence is more than just something that you talked about. It's, I think, pretty evident. So,
it's also cool that they're continuing as aging rockers. I'm going to just bring that theme up again.
So they had their first album in 1980. Then they took 6 years off, right? And then they put out three in about 5 years, and then went away again for a long time. Is that right?
I think so. And then they came back in 2011, and then again now.
Right.
So
there's a very interesting history of the Feelies on the website. Some of you guys have ever used this, rateyourmusic.com. I recommend anyone who's interested in the band, or even if you're interested, I suppose, go to the Feelies page, and on the left-hand side, there's I won't read it out now because that'll be a complete waste of everyone's time, but it's quite amusing, and it talks about a 17-year hiatus in there, which is quite funny.
What?
17-year hiatus?
Wow. Yeah.
But it must have been fun, like, when they started after the 17 years, be like, holy shit, this is fun.
Right.
I would think.
I think they've played on and off in New Jersey throughout their career, but never really played much away from there. They don't like touring too much. And
yeah, it's hard to...
What were you going to say?
Isn't it hard to gauge how popular a band like this would be? Like, if they came here, would a lot of people go see them?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they would draw 50 people or 600 people.
I don't know. I saw them at OK's in either 87 or 88.
Well, now that's cool.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of my favorite memories of going to a concert. And I don't remember that much about the show in particular, but beforehand, I was at my friend's house, and we were at his apartment on Mill Street, and, you know, like having some beers and maybe throwing a frisbee around and stuff, and these girls came by in a pickup truck, and I don't know if they were going to the Feelies concert or if we just, like, how any of this worked, but we ended up, like, getting a ride down to OK's, like, in the back of this pickup truck, and, you know, we had a nice warm glow from the alcohol and the anticipation of seeing the Feelies, and all of it together just really, I'll never forget the feeling.
It was a cool vibe, huh?
Yeah, it was a very cool vibe. Lots of fun.
So I just want to...
It's a great story.
I want to know this, though. Was Marco Pogo there?
Oh, I'm sure he was. He's still around.
Oh, yeah.
You don't see him nearly as often as you used to, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think... Didn't I tell you that I had my career highlight? Because I played in a band, and Marco showed up...
No way.
...and did his jumping jack dance. And I'm like,
wow,
I am playing, and Marco Pogo is here now. Now I've got cred.
Did they talk to him for that documentary?
He was not in it.
For both Craig and all the listeners, none of whom know who Marco Pogo is, he's just kind of a legendary concert goer.
Yeah.
He's like, been going since at least when I was in school here.
Yeah, since the 80s, for
since
sure.
Since the 80s, and just a very exuberant dancer. He's kind of a taller guy, so he stands out.
Yeah.
Always has like a short, or he did, like a short buzz cut and some big round glasses, so he just kind of stand out. But more than the way he looked, it was the way he acted that, you know. And yeah. You go to enough shows, and it's like, good God, that's still there. The guy's still here. And
yeah,
then you go away for 15 years and come back, and you realize that, yeah, he's still there.
Right. And he had great musical taste, because if you'd go see like your favorite band, pretty much he would be there. A friend of mine told me that he actually got on stage with Echo and the Bunnymen once.
Wow.
Yeah. But basically, he would do this thing where he would start bouncing up and down, and then he would gradually get like warmed up, and then he would start doing what looked like jumping jacks, like kind of parading back and forth in front of the stage.
Yeah.
And the other thing that he would do is he would bring a change of clothes in a little duffel bag, because he would get so sweaty that he would change shirts.
Wow.
Yeah, it was another,
I don't remember that
Marco
detail.
Thing. Here's another little trivia about Marco. I actually got in a conversation. I was kind of in on a, like a 3 or 4 person conversation with him. He was berating our drummer from our band for like selling out and playing in a like a tribute or a cover band. You know, he wasn't pleased about that.
He's
like, that's not cool, man. That is totally not cool. Yeah.
Well, what does that say? But he's there to watch.
I know, but
what room does he have to say that?
I know. I think he was watching for him. It was just like, it was just morbid curiosity. He was like, how low can these guys go? Is what he was thinking.
Because your drummer was in the weeds, right?
He was the second drummer. Yeah, he wasn't the original drummer. But the guitar guy that I play with was actually the drummer in the weeds.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah. Craig, do you have a pick from this Feelies album?
I have some picks, but I'm a bit worried. It's like a bit like Russian roulette here now, because the one song Barrett didn't like could be the one I'm about to pick.
It could happen, yeah. That's dangerous.
You know, I had just taken off the headphones to go use the restroom, and I kind of heard that, and I came back.
Yeah,
just to see what he's going to pick.
He's afraid he's going to pick the one that you don't like.
I heard that, so I want to see what he picks.
All right.
Well, I was going to pick In Between Reprise, track 11. We've already talked about that. That's a 9-minute rocker. That's a good track, despite what Will says. we've had 8. I'm going to say track 7, because the 7 rule is always a good rule, and it's called Being Replaced.
Was that the one, Barrett?
Yeah, there's kind of an unfortunate irony in the name of that song, Being Replaced, because now Craig is going to be replaced by somebody else to run the Ipswich Bureau. That was, no, that was not the song. I did like that one. Man. Oh, my God.
I was sweating.
You know, we don't really, the only other person that I know from Ipswich is Amanda.
Well, I think we could easily take care of this, though. We just put a little ad in the Ipswich Times.
Yeah, it could be, yeah.
Right? And, you know, needed no. podcaster to haphazardly discuss music.
Right? Oh, my gosh.
And then we'd have a new podcaster.
Yeah.
No, but we wouldn't.
That was a cruel assessment of Craig's very good work, I think. So, Craig, if you're keeping score...
Do you know what I found out? You might want to get rid of me just yet, because Mekonville, the Mekon's 40th anniversary festival...
Oh, right, yeah.
Ipswich is in Suffolk, in the eastern county in the UK, and the festival is in Suffolk.
Oh, so it's like really close to you then.
I'm trying to find out now. I'm on the website trying to find out where it is. I think it's about 15 miles away where it's taking place.
Yeah. Wow. That is very close.
Yeah. I think if I can't go to at least one day, it would be a bit of a... Well, yeah. Then you might have to let me go.
I think
be replaced at that point.
Yeah. They should invite the American tribute band to come out and play,
you would
right?
think so, yeah.
Wouldn't you think? And pay our expenses and all that stuff? I don't know. If I were them, I would do that. But,
right.
You know.
Well, they have to fly out from... They probably all live in Chicago now, right? John Langford does.
Langford and Sally Timms live in Chicago, and the rest of them are all over the place. A couple of them in the UK, and a couple, I think, elsewhere in Europe. So,
well, yeah. We can just fly along with Langford and Timms.
Langford should have hopefully has a private jet, and he could just have us ride along.
Yeah, probably. You would think he would.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. The most credit we ever got from them is when we went to go see them in Chicago, and they just mentioned that there are Mekon's tribute bands, and I understand that one of them is here tonight. They said,
wow.
that's
how did you not
got.
Tell us any... how could you have said on that bombshell
It was fun.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And then you're thinking, oh, please ask me to come up there and play bass on... Ghost of American Astronauts.
Right.
And they didn't do it.
No, they didn't do it. I was even criticizing the bass player because, like, there was a song they were playing that has this kind of intricate bass part on the recording, and he didn't play, like, the hard part. And I'm like, if that guy can get away with taking a shortcut, then I should be able to, right? Yeah. So, yeah. Well, nobody notices what the bass player plays anyway, so I can do whatever I want. So, that's good. It's fun. Those were the feelies right there. Any other comments on this?
Well, I guess I should mention what the song is that I just really disliked a lot. And why not just play it, right?
Yeah, we'll play a little bit of it.
And then you guys can tell me what you might like or not like about it. And that is the one called Flag Days.
Somebody's talking. What are they saying? Why are they whispering? Nobody's listening.
Well, you cut it out before the little chorus there, but...
Is that the part that's bad, according to you? Okay, we better listen a little more then.
There's a place for a burning arrow in the floodlight on a tower. It's burning hotter.
Well, it's a total cliche to say baby and then say darling, right?
Just the whole thing is, I think, offensively boring. And it, to be honest, it sounds like something they could have written in 5 minutes.
But it has a kind of that Lou Reed feel to it, right?
Yeah,
I think it's okay. I'm going to take the contrary view that it,
I don't
did
like
not
it at all.
I did not find that offensive.
It knocked it this album from, for me, 3.5 stars down to 3.
Wow.
Do you
for
have
me,
any,
you're getting a little bit harsh.
Yeah, I think for me, it took it from like a 728, maybe down to about 719.
Oh, okay. Well.
Yeah, some around there, approximately. Yeah.
Greg, did that make any impression on you one way or the other? Did you like it or dislike it, or were you neutral?
Well, I can only say that when listening to the whole album, that one, that particular track there didn't stand out to me as being particularly bad. It didn't diminish the overall experience in any way. I think it's, I sum up by saying it's quite a warm and charming album. It doesn't reach out and grab you, or it's not exciting in any way, but it's just kind of soothing, a very nice production. And I think I give it 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I think I kept wanting the songs to be a little catchier. You know, it's got this such a laid-back vibe. So I'm kind of in the middle on it. Like, if they came here, I'd like to go see them. I think they'd be a fun band to see live. But I do kind of wish the songs had a little more hooks.
Yeah. You know, I think, I don't know. I mean, maybe my, I just kind of threw that out there, that song not getting down to 3.5, or from 3.5 down to 3. Two things. First of all, one song is not going to take, you know, 1.5 star away from an album.
It could if you're mad enough about it.
Yeah. It didn't quite rise to that level.
If it's
level.
A piano ballad, it's the last track. Right. Could do that for sure.
But I'd say I'd give it 3.5. And, you know, I don't know, just something about the song. To me, it just doesn't sound like a Feely song. And the just lack of imagination with the lyrics and everything. And to the extent that it does sound like a Lou Reed song, I guess I kind of agree with that, but that would be the, you know, the kind of Lou Reed stuff I don't like his, most of his solo stuff from the 80s. I just don't really like at all.
How about the one with Metallica? You like that one?
You know, I never listened to that. I'd be kind of curious because people reacted so viscerally to that.
It'd probably be one.
Did you ever listen to it?
I probably just sampled it a little bit. It seems like something that you'd hear half of one song, you'd just say, no, I'm not going further with this.
You know, we have to listen to
what?
We have to listen to that Ed Sheeran thing. I really don't want to, but
just to see why
just
everybody
for fun.
Hates it. It's supposedly just
I don't think it's going to be fun.
No, it's not going to be fun. Yeah. Well,
you said just for fun.
Let me rephrase that. Just for the hell of it.
Now,
do you guys have
that's a familiar name to me? But was he in a different band?
Or no, is it just... I mean, Craig, he's a British guy, so maybe you have more of a background with him. But didn't he just kind of came out of nowhere, right? And all of a sudden, megastar, making these unbelievably bland, terrible songs.
Does he sound like all those commercials that sound like Mumford and Sons? Is he like that?
I bet he's like that, yeah.
There's this thing.
He's from not far from me as well. Again, the Suffolk connection comes up. He's from the Framlingham, I think, which is a small village 20 miles from here.
Well, I guess people can listen to that if they want to and give their opinions. Maybe now I will listen to one song just so I can find out what it is.
You know, any bit of masochism that you have, sadism in your body would be, you know, relieved by listening to that garbage.
I think Pitchfork gave it like a 3.8 or something. I love it when they give something a 2.7 or 3.8, because like there's only like 5 times a year that they give something less than a 4.
Right.
And then there's still like how do they decide whether it should get like a 2.3 or a 2.8?
Right. It's like it's just 2.3. Funny. Well, it's bad, but it's not that bad.
I think it's just
2.8.
They have to be laughing, right? I have to take that as just humor that they wanted to just slam it. But they did the thing again where there was some reissue, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, best new reissue or ever, and they're like, oh, they're gonna give it a 10. 10. It gets a 10. Come on, right? That's just dumb.
Right.
They never would have given it a 10 when it was new, brand new. They might have given it an 8.7, but they would not give it a 10. So it's just like, okay.
Is that happens, though. Get better by being older? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just like, well, it's almost like saying we're not going to review this. We're just going to say, you know, it's cool in retrospect. I mean, you could take an album like Fleetwood Mac Rumors, right? And it's got like 7 big hits out of the 10 songs on it or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, they would give it a 10. But, okay, if you're going to really be objective, okay, those other 3 songs, those are not that great, so it should be like a 9.4.
Right. So. What about the people that give us 5 stars on Apple Music? Well, like, it literally could not be any better?
Well, then they're correct.
As if saying, I mean, let's be honest, if Chris wasn't on here, would it not be a little bit better? It would be a little better.
Yeah, it could be. If we didn't use the automated Chris joke keyboard, it would be a little bit better. All right. Despite Craig having no live reports, we still have rambled on for well over an hour. And I might not have time to actually edit this in a timely fashion, so the listeners are going to demand their $0 back.
Mm-hmm.
So
there was that one thing we talked about before the podcast. You can feel free to edit this out if you don't want to follow through on it.
Oh, the NCAA basketball thing? Oh. So Barrett was saying, because the biggest sporting event other than the Super Bowl in the United States is the college basketball tournament. So Barrett was thinking we could do a Will's Band contest. You know, there's only going to be like 5 people who are going to make it to the end of this podcast and are going to even hear this.
That may be
true. We could put that up on Facebook and Twitter, though, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we might try it, right? Are we going to commit to where it would be? Yahoo?
Well,
or
either Yahoo or ES. Do you have a preference?
No.
Have you been on? Well, we can talk about this.
I've done a Yahoo fantasy sports thing.
Let's do it on there, then.
Okay, so on Yahoo, we're going to try to set up a prediction group for the NCAA tournament for Will's Band of the Week. And
right.
So I don't even know if it's going to work, but if it does, you know, go to Yahoo and they'll probably have a thing, and then
you can type in the search, the
name.
You
put Will's Band of the Week, and then it'll be like a group.
Right.
And it'll be a race for second place after my picks.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, second place is fine. You shouldn't feel bad about that.
Craig, do you care about basketball at all, or?
No.
I don't think American basketball is like top in Craig's list of relevant things. But, well, we might try it. So, and we'll put up on Facebook and Twitter if we do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
We'll put a link up there. But maybe you can search it, too. So.
Yeah. So it'll be Yahoo.
I've got some advice for people, just to, you know, I hate to give out secrets, you know, but I think I'll do it just for the listeners. There's a really good strategy. If 2 teams are playing and you're trying to predict the winner, try to choose the stronger of the 2 teams. Like the team that's played better over the course of the season is usually likely to win the game.
That's counterintuitive.
It's something that I've
incredible depth of insight.
It's one of those things that I've kind of developed over the
course of
years.
Does that actually work? I mean, if you'd have to go back and look at years of data.
Yeah.
I wonder if that would hold true.
Yeah, I mean, you might need to do a little more detailed search, but I've found that generally that works.
So in other words, if a team is maybe likely to outscore the second team, maybe you'd pick that one?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Now, there's another thing on the other side, though. This is where it gets complicated.
Weird logic to that, I guess.
Here's where it gets complicated, though. Suppose a team has lost 10 games in a row, right? Well, then clearly they're due to win the next one.
Right.
So you should probably pick them to win.
That simple math.
Yeah, because they're due to win the next one. Yeah. Hmm. I was in Las Vegas once with a friend of mine. This is like 15 years ago or something. And we were standing by a roulette wheel, okay? Where people generally, they'll just like pick black or red, right? And the wheel spins and you either win or lose, right? But they put a thing, they have a big, like a LED readout that says like the last, whatever the last several spins have been, right? And this guy with a totally serious look, you know, totally serious tone, says to him, he's giving us this really serious advice. And he says, you know, what you need to do is if the last several spins have been black, you definitely want to bet on red because red is due to come up.
Hmm.
And it was really serious.
Hmm.
Yeah. But maybe what if all the black was coming up because like there was an imbalance in the machine? See, then you'd want to pick black.
Right.
All
right. Interesting.
We give gambling advice here too. Man, have you been, I'm giving myself an impossible editing job by rambling like this. Craig, thanks for appearing from the Ipswich Bureau.
My pleasure.
And we will have you on again in, I don't know, if we go by the past record, I looked at my Skype call record, and it's like every 2 or 3 months you're on. So, but, yeah. You know, if you come up with some...
It's a good pattern.
If you come up with some content that we can't refuse, like your 7 live reports or, you know, some great band, just let us know. So we can buck the trend. We could go totally nuts and have you on 2 weeks in a row if we wanted to. Because this is like complete free form. That's what we're doing here, right?
You'd have to take a week off from work, though, for all the preparation.
True, that's true.
All the journalism and listening and note-taking.
Yeah, generally.
Well, the exciting thing is the Bats are coming to the UK.
Oh, they are.
It's in June, so don't get too excited, listeners. Don't hold your breath, but I'll be back around that time to report back on that
Good. Now, if they're going to go that far, they might as well come over here, right? Because they're 3/4 of the way, basically, right?
They posted on Facebook about this. I don't want to give you the bad news, but one of the reasons they wouldn't come begins with T.
Oh, really? Well, I don't blame them. So,
yeah.
No, I think they said Clinton was quite bad, but on a scale, like Clinton's maybe bad 15 out of 100, Trump is bad 90 out of 100 or something like that. You know?
Yeah, that's...
He was the worst of two evils, maybe.
Really, really can't disagree. Yeah. All right. Well, good for you, Bats. That's fine. Craig will scout him out for us.
Yeah. Expensive visas, I think, for bands touring in the States is a big issue.
There was a big... we could have put that in the music news. There was a controversy at South by Southwest because they had a thing in the contract that if you have any problems and you're not from the U.S., you're going to get deported. Right? Did you see that? It was like a deportation.
I saw a reference to it, but I didn't read the story.
It's like a deportation clause in the South by Southwest contract. And one of the artists pointed this out, and he said, "I'm not coming because you have this bullshit clause in the contract." And then several other artists started saying, "God, that's really totally shitty." And then they had to come back and say, "Well, sorry about that. It's in the standard language, and it's been in there for the last 10 or 15 years, and it's just standard language, and, you know, we weren't trying to be mean." And so they kind of softened it with that, and then I think they actually might have gotten rid of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes on a different context when you when you have certain people in
like
leadership.
Like an actual thing that could happen.
Like somebody who would actually
all of a sudden
act out on it. Yeah, yeah. All right. Even though, you know, Trump's probably a big fan of indie rock, so, you know, he probably listens to the Feelies.
Mm-hmm.
What would he listen to?
I can't even imagine.
Because there would be like, there were like Obama playlists, right, that mm-hmm. would get publicized, like a Spotify thing. And they weren't terrible. They were okay, right?
Well, they're carefully like selected and, you know what I mean, for effect. It's a little different than just like going into somebody's play history on Spotify and seeing what they actually listen to. But like in general, it was fine.
Yeah. But you can't imagine Trump even liking anything that's remotely good, right? The only you would think I would associate him with like the worst country music you could even come up with.
I don't think that he would like that.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't even like that. I think he's totally non-musical because he has no...
Yeah, what is it? Like 70-year-old guy from... grew up in Manhattan. You'd think he'd have like okay taste based on that, but you know...
Could be secretly a big Wilco fan.
Mm-hmm. Could be secretly... Right. Yeah, who knows?
Oh, okay. We got to get out of here.
This is too much.
We'll talk to you again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast using iTunes or any other podcast app. All of our podcasts are also available directly on our webpage, willsband.net. You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter @WillsBand. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.
Okay, so I Googled what music does, and then it automatically filled in.
Trump-like. Oh, God.
Oh, no.
That's terrible.